That song is a terrible song. Because when I was on my 30-day retreat, this was 2 years ago, and it was a silent retreat. The first part of the retreat is called Sin Week, and you start dealing with the sinfulness in your life. And at first, you think you're really good at it. You know, you're telling God all the sins, but then God says, I want more. I don't want your sins. I want sinfulness. I want all the choices that you make that are not for me. Get rid of those. And so in the middle of my sin week, I talked to my spiritual director and I said, I know that Matt Maher has this really great song, Lord, I Need You. And oh my gosh, as soon as I started playing it, like I didn't stop crying for four more days, you know? Because it's true, we need Jesus, don't we? To live this life, to give ourselves over to Him, to try and make it one more step, we need Him. So tonight we're going to talk about falling in love with our Lord. We're talk about going beyond just needing Him, but like responding to Him and giving ourselves to Him and making a gift of ourselves to Him. The problem with this is that whenever we encounter the Lord in His love, when we fall deeply in love with Him, we meet a part of ourselves that's unable to be big enough to take it in, right? Unable to respond fully in the way we want to. And so when we are touched by God's love, we also encounter our own smallness, our own inability, and our own weakness. And so we have to wrestle that with God while we're being loved, while we're entering into that. So I just wanted to make a statement on that it's all right for us when we're being loved by God to feel like we can't make an adequate response, because He's so big. He's so wonderful. He's so, life-giving. His love is huge. It's what created the universe. It's what sustains all life. God's love is what makes everything work together. God's love is what makes this world, keep turning and in motion. And so it's hard for us to enter in at times because that love is, it feels like it won't fit. It's just too big and we're too small. We're too little. But there were some saints, that like made that effort to love God and be loved by God. I think of John of the Cross and some of his writings and the way he just realized that Jesus loved to rest his head on his chest, on his heart. And he began to write a love letter to Jesus about how he just loves Jesus resting his head on his heart. Can you imagine having that grace to rest with Jesus, with Him on your heart? And then St. Teresa of Lisieux, how she just, all her acts are done out of love. So it's not impossible for human beings to love God and to make a response to God. It's not too much. We can do it. But we have to depend on God for that to happen, right? If we want to love God and be loved by God, we have to become helpless. We have to really become like children and let Him work through us to be loved, to receive that love, to be open to that love. There's a bit of childlikeness that we need to adopt. And that's a mode of receptivity. What I mean by that is, what child does things on its own? You're in the front row here, little man. Do you do things on your own, or do you have to be told what to do? Be honest. What's that? All right, so sometimes you make your bed, sometimes you have to be told, right? But children are often in a mode of receptivity. And Jesus is often referring to us as little children. He's saying to us, I want you to be like little children because I want you to learn that you can't do anything on your own. I want you to come to me for everything. I think you should come to me, for all your needs and all your difficulties and all your wounds. And I'll take care of all those wounds and difficulties and needs. But I also want you to come to me with your inability to love. I want you to come to me and receive my power so that you can love me. See, even loving God requires us that we allow him to make that happen in us. We can't do it. We're too small. We're too little. So we need God's help even to love him. And that's perfect, because the more we become like little children, the more we begin to adopt this attitude of, Lord, I need you. Every hour I need you. That song is perfect. I need you, Lord, even to love you. I need you. So that's something we have to remember. It's not going to be your strength that you're going to love God. It's going to be your surrender. It's going to be in your surrender that you love God. You see, Paul, he had this very terrible teaching in Ephesians. Ephesians 5, verse 11 and forward. Actually, it's 21. He says that, wives, you need to be submissive to your husbands. And I know that that's hard for us to hear, but this has to do with love. How many of us understand that reading? I think many of us think that St. Paul is, kind of a jerk when he, does this teaching, because he's saying, wives, you have to be submissive to your husbands. And it sounds like you're being coerced or something, right? But if you take it apart and you look at what St. Paul is saying, he puts that all into context. He says, just like Christ loves his church, husbands must love their wives. And so he says, wives, be submissive to your husbands. Now let's take that word, submissive. What is that in Latin? It's sub and missio. Father Pullis, what does sub mean? Under. To be under. And what is missio? Right, a mission, or if it's a command form, it's to be sent. So, when he says, wives, be submissive, he's saying, wives, have a mission under the main mission, right? Submission means to have a mission that is under the main mission. Now, what is the main mission? That husbands must love their wives. Christ must love his church. So the submission, if the husband's loving, then the wife needs to be loved. Now, isn't that beautiful? The mission of the wife, and if you look at this in the context of Jesus and his teaching, his understanding of marriage and how he sort of takes a look at the church as the bride of Christ, right? That the bride, the wife, must have a mission, which is to be loved. That's what we're called to be. We're people that are called to be loved. That's our mission. That Jesus will do the loving, and Jesus will be giving us the strength to be loved. But our job is to show up and to be loved. That's our mission under this mission that Jesus gives the husband. And as a church, the bride of Christ, we are to learn how to be loved. So, that's the first thing, is to recognize that you have to allow it. You have to let it happen, let it engage that being loved part. Don't try and do all the things that are loving, but first let Jesus love you. Here's an example. I went on an 8-day retreat too. I didn't do my 30-day retreat right away because I thought that was too drastic. I did an 8-day silent retreat to build up to it. So on my 8-day retreat, and this is my first big retreat in like 12 years of being a priest, I was nervous. Like the Lord was going to say, you don't pray well, you need to work on this and you need to grow in that. And I thought for sure the Lord was going to have a lot of ideas, right, about my life and how he's going to improve on me. And so when I was going, it's in South Dakota, so it's a long plane ride, and you have to make several connections, and it's a long ride from the airport. And so I was thinking, Lord, I know that you're probably not going to be happy that I don't pray enough, so I'm going to work on prayer, be more disciplined. Lord, I know that you want me to work on, my priorities, so really, I'm going to give those to you on this retreat. And had all these plans that the Lord was going to work on. And so when I got there, my retreat master director said, go out in the field and just pray. Just, this first half a day, just go pray. get out there and go pray. Do at least two or three holy hours and pray. And I thought, wow, okay, that's going to be easy, you know. But while I go out in the field, I'm dragging with me those thoughts about how I'm not praying enough. I'm not, you know, letting God have time with me enough. I'm not including him on my, you know, days, you know, when I need him. I'm just trying to do it on my own. And as I'm going out there to pray, I'm telling God all these things I want him to do and all these things I think he should do and how he's going to improve on me and a lot of accusations. And then I heard this voice as I got into the fields and was watching the sunset. I heard this voice just say, "Shh, Joe, quiet, just quiet." And I'm like, "What?" And I heard the Lord say very clearly, "Joe, I love that you're playful." What? You're not mad that I don't pray, you know, consistently every day at the same time? You're not mad that you're not better at being a priest? You're not, you know, upset that I'm not, you know, better after 12 years of being a priest? And the Lord's like, let's just start with, "I love that you're playful." And what it was is the Lord was saying, I want to start with a place where I can love you. Let me love you first, Joe, before you bring all those condemning words and thoughts. Just let me love you. It was very powerful. And of course, the sun's going down. It's a beautiful sunset. And I'm bawling my eyes out again, you know. Because the Lord has a way of doing that. He gets in there and says, I'm not concerned about what you're concerned about. You may think you need to work on these things in your life. I want to love you. Please let me love you. That was the first thing he started with. And, you know, it's not easy. You know, we fill our head and our hearts with a lot of words that aren't ours and shouldn't be there. A lot of condemnation. You know, on the 8-day retreat, they teach you that when you encounter God, especially in a very strong way, he reveals these lies, you know, that you've started to believe about yourself. He begins to reveal what Satan is trying to tell you. And God won't tolerate that. He wants to get those out of there. So these lies start to rise to the surface, and you can begin to deal with them. I'm not good enough. And the Lord takes that lie, and he gets it out of there. You are good enough. You're my son. You're my beloved son. And I'm well pleased with you. You know, the Lord starts at a place of love with all of us, but we have to first get that junk out of there. Let the Lord love you and begin to let him take these lies off your shoulder that weight you down. You know, how many of you wake up in the morning and remind yourself that you're a beloved son and a beloved daughter of God the Father? How many of you wake up and before you touch the ground, you say, "Thank you, Lord, I'm your beloved son. I'm your beloved daughter." How many of us take the time to realize that that's who you are? And on a feast like today, the feast of the triumph of the cross, I think to myself, I'm not worthy of this great sacrifice that Jesus gave. You know, every drop of blood, every ounce of his being, he poured out. He didn't hold any back. And in that pouring out, in that giving, he made you sons and daughters of his Father. Because when he rose from the dead, the first thing he said to Mary Magdalene was, "Don't touch me, I'm going to my Father." But he says it like this. He says, "I'm going to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." When he poured himself out on that cross, he made you sons and daughters of his Father. Beloved sons and daughters. That's something we need to hang on to. That's something you and I need to believe and to engage in. What does it mean to be a beloved son or a beloved daughter? What's that feel like, Lord? You tell me about what you think of me. Help me to know your love. Help me to get rid of the stuff that's not sonship or daughterhood. Help me to get rid of the things that you know, get in the way of that. Let me live as your son and let me live as your daughter. That means that you're going to have to spend time with Jesus. If you and I are going to be sons and daughters of this great God, we need to spend time with Jesus. This is a very difficult thing in our day. Because we spend time doing a lot of things, don't we? But if we're going to be loved and fall more deeply in love with Jesus, if we're going to fall in love with our Father and hear those words, "I'm well pleased with you," we need to spend time with him and give him a chance to say that to us. We need to put aside those electronic things that keep hounding us. And we need to put aside the time we sit in front of a TV set and get talked to. We need to be right here with him much more often. Because in this moment, in this hour, he's pouring out creative love. He's pouring out soul-expanding love. He's pouring out graces that make you grow huge inside to contain all that God wants to give you. But it doesn't happen if you and I don't spend time with him, right? We need to spend much, much more time. And you won't regret it. You know, Jesus died on a cross. One life was given. But in that one life, that one sacrifice, every human life was gained, right? Every single human person from the past, the present, and the future have been won by that sacrifice, have been gained, have been redeemed. You know, the power of you just sitting with Jesus and allowing him to love you is so healing and life-giving. And you need to make time for it. You need to let the Lord bring you to that place where he can love you and tell you who you are. Because there's so many voices telling you who you're not, right? So many times you're told that you're not a beloved son or daughter. We're told that we are sinners, or that we're, you know, wounded and broken. And we start in a different place. We start with beloved sonship and daughterhood. We also need to be with him because that's where disciples are. That's where the love is. You know, in Mark's gospel, all the disciples were people that were with Jesus. If you were with Jesus, with him on the road, with him in the boat, with him on the mountain, with him at the transfiguration, with him at the wedding of Cana, if you were with him, then you were his disciple. And when you weren't with him, you weren't acting like a disciple. So we see Judas, not with him, but with the guards. When Peter denies Jesus, he's with the guards and not with Jesus. All the examples of the disciples who weren't with Jesus and started falling apart, it's obvious in Mark's gospel that if you want to be a disciple, you have to be with Jesus. So that means in your day, you're carrying Jesus with you. You know, when you get up in the morning, instead of going to your prayer closet or wherever you pray in your house, instead of leaving that to go to work, take it with you. Don't leave your place of prayer. Do everything from that place of prayer with Jesus, right? Stay with him all day long. The first thing that comes to mind, you think, that's just impractical. That won't work. I can't take Jesus in my prayer box with me. That won't work. Have you tried it? You know what's awesome? Is that everything works better when you take Jesus with you. Everything works out when you take Jesus with you and when you stay with him. It's not impractical. As a matter of fact, it's miraculous. It's wondrous because everything seems to work out better when you stay with him. So we stay with him. We are loved by him. We're restored. And like I said, this soul-expanding love and grace begins to open us up to take more in. And start to become fully who we are made to be. We're not just living a half life, you know, drudging through and doing it on our own. No, when we're with him, it comes alive. It breaks open. You know, you become fully who you're supposed to be, a son and a daughter of God the Father, beloved sons and daughters of God the Father. I want to speak to you about one of those moments when I was really with Jesus, and I've shared this with my parish at times. You never want to not be with him once you've been with him. Isn't that true? If you've been with Jesus, you always want to be with him. You don't want to leave him. You want it to last forever, you know? And because we live in this world, we have to wait to heaven, for heaven, to get that fully, right? But when you taste a bit of that down here, you just want to stay with Jesus. You don't want to leave. So I want to share just an experience I had when I was a young man. Have you ever had to grow in your prayer from being a child who prays to an adult who prays? You know what I'm talking about? Like, when you're a child, you pray Our Father's, Hail Mary's, Glory Be's. But when you grow older, you start talking to God. You start, you know, speaking your heart and your mind to Jesus. Well, at that time in my life, when I started to do that, I was later in my teens, just about out of high school. And I came from a very traditional home. And we prayed lots of rosaries, and we prayed whenever someone got sick or when someone was dying, we prayed a rosary for them as a family. And my neighbor across the street, she was 17, and she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And this was almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago. And my friend, Elizabeth, I had known her since I was 3 years old. We lived across the street all our lives. You know, we drove to school together, and then we planned on driving to college together. And what worked out was that I wound up driving her not to college, but to her oncology sessions, you know, to get chemo and to get radiation. And I remember that I thought, I'm going to pray for her, and I'm going to ask the Lord to heal her. And so I started to pray a lot of Our Fathers and Hail Marys and Glory Be's. You know, I'd start out with 20 at a time, and then I'd double it and get real serious, right? And pray 40 Hail Marys and 40 Our Fathers and 40 Glory Be's, you know? And then the next morning, I'd wake up, and we'd be driving to college, and I'd look at Elizabeth, and I'm waiting for that spark, you know, all my prayers to get working. And I'm looking at her, thinking she's going to, you know, be better. And I'd look, and she's still sad. She's still wounded. She's still, you know, hurting because of the cancer. And I thought, okay, I'm going to pray 50 Our Fathers and 50 Hail Marys, you know? And I would do this like week after week. You know, I was up to like 200 and 300 Our Fathers, and it wasn't working, you know? And then one day, I got in the car, and I looked at Elizabeth's face, and she was bright and happy, and she was like doing better. And I'm like, whoa, like 350, that's the magic number, you know? That did it. And I'm looking at her, and she's doing so great. And I go, wow, you look so great. What's going on? Why are you so happy? And she goes, oh, Joe. She said, I went to a prayer group over at St. Mary's, and I was prayed over, and it was just wonderful. And I'm like, it wasn't me? It wasn't my 350 prayer? What? You know, kind of disappointed. I'm like, oh, that's good. You know, I'm glad. I said, a prayer group? What is that? Isn't that weird, Elizabeth? We're Catholic. Prayer group. And she said, no, it's not. It's in a Catholic church. You know, I go, okay. She goes, you should come with me. And I said, oh, that's not my style. I'll stick with my Our Fathers and Hail Marys. And she would ask me over and over to come with her. She'd ask me, like, every week, why don't you come with me? And you know how hard it is to say no to someone with cancer? I mean, it takes a lot of fortitude. And I got away with it for almost 2 or 3 weeks, but then finally I'm like, all right, I'll go. I don't know what's so special, but I'll go. I'll go. Just stop asking. So, you know, how many of you have been to a prayer group, like a charismatic or a renewed prayer group? Okay. So there's a lot of hugging, right? If you're not used to that, that's a strange thing, right? So I get to the door, and apparently Elizabeth had been telling people that she's working on me to get me to come, because when I got to the door, George, I don't even know George, goes, ha, Joe, come over here. And he gives me this huge hug. I'm like, oh my, they're like these eternal hugs, you know, they don't end. I said, hi, what's your name? I'm George. Come on in. You know, we're going to pray and we're going to sing. A lot like what we did tonight, just without adoration, right? And I was pretty comfortable with most of it. You know, there was a teaching, some Bible, you know, reading, and then some just sort of reflections. And then I looked up and saw what was going on in the front of the church. They were praying over each other. And I noticed that some were falling down. And so I turned to Elizabeth. I said, Elizabeth, this is a cult. This is what they do on TV. This isn't Catholic. This is wrong. We have got to get out of here. And she starts like laughing, you know, her idiot neighbor, you know, what? I said, look. She said, that's fine. They're just, you know, being prayed over. That's Jesus. I'm like, that's not Jesus. That's something else. You know, that's fake. Right? And then I kind of liked going with her. The people were nice. I went a couple weeks in a row, maybe 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Then she asked me, hey, Joe, you want to be prayed over? I said, oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not, you know, because that's still in my mind a cult, something not Catholic about it, you know. And so how do you say no to someone with cancer, right? So she kept asking and asking. I got really ticked one time. We were in there, and I'm like, just give up on it, will you? And I got up, and I, like, left her at her pew, and I walked. I go, where's the bathroom? Like, yeah, I've been going for 2 months, right? I don't know where the bathroom is. I go, where's the bathroom? And she goes over there by the corner in the front. I get up, and I cruise over to the corner in the front, and I look, and there's just walls. There's no door. I'm in the corner in the front of the church, and I'm in the line for being prayed over. Right? Yeah. What a snot. So I look back. I throw her a glance from up front, like, you rotten friend, you know? And I'm thinking, I'm going to get out of this line. I got to get out of here. But then I thought, well, now you look like a big baby. You know, you're up here in front. You're getting in line, and now you're going to run away. What a baby. You know? So I'm like, all right, you know, I'll get prayed over. I'll do it. But then I'm thinking, holy Toledo, what do I do? You know, what do I say? What do I ask for? What's going, you know, what? What's safe? Something safe. Pray, ask him to pray for something safe, you know. Before I could think of something safe, there's George. And he's like, Joe, oh, you want to be prayed over? Come on in, come on up. And he's like, what do you want us to pray for? And I'm thinking, safe, something safe. Oh, I just want to know Jesus better. That's not a safe prayer, people. Not a safe prayer. No. So George, he goes to pray over me, and he's just going to put his hand on my head. He had a little blessed oil. He was just going to pray over my head. You guys, and I'm a priest, I'm not lying. I didn't see him even touch me. As he reached his hands out to me to pray over me, everything disappeared. I mean, the walls, the ceiling, everything was gone. Everything. And I was like in a cloud. It was unbelievable. Like, I was in this beautiful, warm, it was like a cloud, but it was light. Like, the cloud was made of light. And there I am, I'm standing in this great and wonderful, like, cloud of light, and I'm feeling so good all of a sudden, you know? And when I looked at myself, I could see, like, I was covered in black, like I had tar on me. But there was this wind, and it was like, again, like light, but it was wind and light. And it hit me, and it melted all that black off of me. And then it went from, after it melted that black, it hit me and it went through me to the other side. And when I looked up as to where the wind was coming from, it was Jesus. He was standing right in front of me. Now, at that time, I was a young man. I didn't know anything about divine mercy. But I tell you, if I were to have known what I know now about divine mercy, that was that light, that mercy coming out of his chest, like wind and light and heat and warmth. And I'm looking at him. I'm just soaking it up. And I felt so good. And it lasted like 30 seconds, you know. And I wanted it to last like days. It just was like 30 seconds. And then all the walls came back and the ceiling came back. And I'm lying on my back. I'm one of those idiots lying down on the floor, you know. I'm like, what? What? So I'm kind of like gaining like perspective. And I'm on my back and my hair is soaked. I'm like, what happened, you know? And the carpet is soaked under my head, and my eyes are just wet. And they've turned the lights off in the church, right? It's dark. And I said, George, where are you? You know, what happened? He goes, Joe, you've been lying here for 45 minutes. come on, let's go to Big Boy and talk about it. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? But that was my moment, my with Jesus moment, where I stayed with him for 30 seconds. It was wonderful. I can close my eyes and I am there again. It doesn't diminish. It's never lost its power. Whenever I close my eyes and if I go to that place, I can see it and feel it. It's like it hasn't faded. And that was 25 some years ago. And we need these moments, people, in our life to be loved by Jesus. We need them. You cannot live without them. And we will never know our beloved sonship, our beloved daughterhood, right? We won't know that we're the depth of what that means if we don't stay with Jesus and remain in his love. You know, I never gave up on Hail Marys and Our Fathers, you know. Never gave up on the power of prayer. But I also know that you have to dive in to the love of God. You have to let him love you. That's one of your missions, right? Is to be loved. To be loved by the God who made all of this. It's a pretty fantastic thing, isn't it? So start doing that. Get up in the morning and remind yourself who you are. I am a beloved son of God the Father. I am your beloved daughter. I can't wait for you to love me. I can't wait for you to love me. That's how we should start our day. And just don't leave that spot. Like I said, take that prayer with you into everything you do. As you're raising your children, do that knowing that you're a beloved son and daughter of God the Father. Know that he loves you and you're loving them with that same love. When you go to work and it's difficult, thank God. You know, Lord, thank you for my work and thank you for how difficult it is because it really makes your love a lot better. You know, I really love it when you love me. But take it with you into everything. Because we're so small. You know, as human beings, we're so weak and so little. You know, that we need to be like children. We need to be totally receptive. Always having, what does Teresa say, St. Therese of Lisieux? She said, you know, I'll never be a great saint. She said, I'm too small and too weak and too little. She said, but if I lift my hands up to my dad, my father, he'll pick me up. And he'll make me the greatest saint ever. Isn't that beautiful? That's a child's heart. So Lord, if I just lift my hands up to you and say, I can't do it, he'll love you. He'll love through you. He'll do it all for you. So thank you for letting me be here tonight. I so enjoyed it. I just love being with Jesus in the Eucharist. This is such a privilege for us to be with the King of Kings, right? And to pray together, the body of Christ, being loved and loving one another is so potent, so powerful for our lives. I don't know what to do from here, Father, except step down.